It's that time. Lock and load. The Michael Berry Show is on the air.
Subject line that has my attention. What you got, Jonathan?
Hey, so I remember I listened to your afternoon show when I'm at work. I work second shift, and you brought up Jaws. I forget the circumstances, but it reminded me of how when I was at University of Houston studying with Mark Barton, I did a degree in tuba. He used to tell us a story of Tommy Johnson. He was the tubist that was on the with the orchestra that recorded the score to Jaws and a bunch of other John Williams scores. And he said that he also taught at like a middle school or a school around there. And
that's right.
He had a there was one rehearsal he had to have a substitute fill in for him. And when he showed up after his teaching, he found that his substitute didn't show up. And when he was getting set in ready to play, that was they were actually recording like the solo part. That was the ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yep.
And it it was a way of him to teach us, you know, if you're going to take a sub position, be responsible, know what you're getting into, and make sure your sub is going to be there.
That's an interesting story. Thank you for the call. Mike Rowe addressed just that in his fabulous Paul Harvey-esque storytelling style.
When witnesses reflected upon the impact of what Tommy had perpetrated on that fateful afternoon, they would say the same things we always hear after situations like this. How is it possible? He seemed like such a nice man. Truth is, Tommy was a nice man. He won the Lifetime PTA Award from Sepulveda Junior High School, where he taught band for over 20 years. He was the teacher every parent hopes their teenager will get. He was not the sort of man anyone expected to encounter on the shoulder of a Los Angeles freeway, driving like a maniac, armed with a deadly tuba. That's right, a tuba. Ultimately, everything on Tommy's long and impressive resume would be eclipsed by the two notes he played on that fateful day in 1975. The day he swerved off the 405 at speeds entirely inconsistent with the posted maximum. The day he bolted across a parking lot while clutching a 40-pound tuba and crashed through the doors of 20th Century Fox, where a world-class orchestra waited for the tardy tubist. Tommy called out to the composer. "Excuse me, I'm sorry, but I think you gave me the wrong part." The composer laughed. "No, Tommy. Those notes are all for you." The composer knew only one man with the talent to turn the bouncy sound of the lumbering tuba into something truly terrifying. So he wrote a completely non-traditional solo for the best tuba player you've never heard of. And the rest is Hollywood history. In the back of the hall, the not-yet-famous director paced in nervous anticipation. On the podium, the not-yet-famous composer brought the orchestra to attention and smiled down at the tuba player with the sweat-stained shirt. "Today, Tommy, you're the bad guy. Now go ahead and scare the hell out of us." Tommy nodded and took one more very deep breath. Then, with just two notes, he brought a monster to life and gave a voice to our most primal fear. You know the composer, John Williams. You know the director, Steven Spielberg. You might even know the mechanical shark. His name was Bruce. But now you know the man who put the teeth into Jaws. Tommy Johnson, the mild-mannered middle school teacher who ventured way out on thin branches to snag an Academy Award for what many believe to be the best movie soundtrack of all time. And in the process, scared America right out of the water with just two notes from his trusty tuba.
Stephen in Georgia, you're on the Michael Berry Show. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Michael, this is Steve. A couple weeks ago, you had the owner of the Greasy Spoon Bistro, Soul Food Bistro. Uh-huh. So my wife and I went there the Sunday after you had him on. And I'm going to tell you, that restaurant, they do everything from beginning to end perfectly. It's a small storefront, little cafeteria style. And my wife's in a wheelchair. She's disabled. We were probably 13th in line outside waiting to get in. That's how packed they are. And the security guard pointed us out, had everybody get out of the way, got us a table. And the food was phenomenal. The service was incredible. And I'll tell you, it was a really great community experience watching person after person after person come in. And not to mention the exceptional food. I just want to pass it on that man has got, he's got it happening there for a restaurant, for a soul food restaurant. It was exceptional. And I hope you get a chance to go there.
I will. Thank you for the call. As soon as I'm back, I will make a visit over. And our guest that day did not tell me. Wasn't until I actually found out after we got off, or actually we were to have been off the air, and I made him stay longer. He was having a major reconstructive surgery the following day because he had had butt cancer last year. And he'd been pooping in a bag, and they had to rebuild his whole system once everything else had healed. So the following day, which was a Friday, he was scheduled. Matthew Bozeman, I think, is his name, if I remember correctly. But anyway, the following day, he was scheduled to have that surgery. Well, you can imagine that's got to be a painful surgery. That's got to be a big deal. And he was going through that whole interview as if, nothing, no big deal. He'd had like seven surgeries since he'd had the cancer the year before, and he'd gone through radiation, chemo, the whole deal. So pretty strong willed individual. And I know a number of you went out and visited the Greasy Spoon because he wasn't supposed to go by there. He's supposed to be doing his prep for his surgery, but he went by anyway. And he said there were 30 people within 20 minutes of when we hung up that were waiting to get into the restaurant. And I shook every one of their hands and thanked them for being there. And I got to tell you, it is so humbling when we have someone on the air and y'all go down and support them. You go online and say positive things. You encourage them. You spend your dollars with them. You do so many things. That is how our show has expanded beyond us talking on the radio to being something that can actually move mountains, because there are so many of you that if each of you individually says, well, I think I'll go eat at that restaurant. I think I will support that business. I think I will go to that event. I think I will buy my products and services from people who are sponsors of the show. And that is why it works. Avi Katz at katzcoffee.com told me the other day, I said, how are we doing? He said, man, I'm having trouble keeping up. I got so many restaurants that want Katz Coffee because you asked them to. It's amazing how people have responded.
This is the Michael Berry Show.
Enjoy it.
Ago today, Saul Hudson is born in Hampstead, London, in England. At 11, he would move to Los Angeles and later be known to the world as Slash. Guns N' Roses. Lockdown Lena, the Comandante, is determined to get back her power. We've got a couple of audio clips of her press conference. Y'all haven't paid close enough attention. She's going to have to come back. Here we go.
We're now seeing two Harris counties. One Harris County that's fully vaccinated, protected, doing its part to get our economy running, and doing its part to protect those who cannot get vaccinated. Unfortunately, we're also seeing another Harris County that's hesitant to take action.
Why does it seem like she's always about to cry? I think it's just a complete lack of any self-confidence because she knows that she doesn't know anything. She's just repeating platitudes that are handed to her. Just complete idiot. Here's more.
I know they're uncomfortable. I don't like wearing masks either. But until we get the numbers back down, let's all wear our masks again.
No. And finally...
We're seeing higher rates of unvaccinated amongst the African-American community, followed by the Hispanic community here in Harris County. But really, all communities have residents that are just unwilling to get the vaccine.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll get right on that. So she's come up with a new rating on our... on her little color chart. She got her Crayolas back out, and she wants y'all to know she's changed colors.
New from Fauci Co. Industries, it's the Lena Hidalgo Pandemic Alert Color-Coded Mood Ring. Watch it change colors as the local COVID infection rates go up and down.
Do the colors correlate with the number of infected people?
No, not really, but it looks cool. Watch it go from red to red. And back to red again.
Does it display any other colors?
Sometimes, maybe.
Aw, this thing sucks.
Yep, much like everything else the Democrats touch, the Lena Hidalgo Pandemic Alert color-coded mood ring is highly disappointing. So order yours today.
Meanwhile, a friend of mine, driving on I-45 yesterday, gets smashed into... by some dude named Shuntarius. I didn't grow up with any Shuntariuses. You might have. The dude, my buddy, is in a Lincoln Navigator, you know, pretty big vehicle. Shuntarius is driving a Camaro. Shuntarius smashes at a high rate of speed into my buddy from the back, and then immediately drives around, gets on the shoulder, and begins to flee. Well, the smash was so violent that it blew out Shuntarius's tire. So he is running red lights and trying to flee, and my buddy's able to keep a safe distance because you don't know who this guy is and follow him. Well, it turns out there was a cop in the distance that had seen this and a couple of witnesses who also gave chase. So they finally get Shuntarius stopped a few blocks away because his car craps out, smoke coming out of everywhere. He's totaled it. So the cop shows up, calls for backup. They put Shuntarius in the back of the car. Well, as it turns out, there's video of all this. There's two eyewitnesses. Shuntarius doesn't have insurance, but he promises that tomorrow, which is today, by 8 o'clock today, he promises the officer, he will get my friend his insurance information. You won't believe this? He hadn't managed to deliver the insurance information yet. I'm sure he has it. I'm sure he does. There's video of the guy fleeing from my buddy because my buddy's got a car full of people and somebody films it. My buddy's bumper is stuck in the grill of the Camaro. He's driving with a bumper hanging out like he's up at bat. He's driving along with this. His car's belching smoke. Officer puts him in the back seat. He has no insurance that he can show. He can't call insurance, but he promises that tomorrow he'll provide insurance. He has smashed into this car, totaled his car, and run. And we got two witnesses to verify this. How do you think this story ended up? Take a wild guess. Officer called the DA. Here's what I got. I've taken body cam footage that I can provide to you as evidence of the phone that marked this whole thing of him fleeing. District attorney said, nope. Let them settle it in court. So, Shontarius is taken out of the back of the squad car where he believes he's going to be arrested. The cuffs are taken off, and he's sent on his way with absolutely no consequences for what he has just done. So the answer is, if you smash into somebody, just run. If you get away, there's no downside. If you don't, there's no downside. So what lesson did Shontarius learn from this little exchange? That there are no consequences for his criminal actions. No consequences at all. Think he's going to rush out and get insurance now? No. Why would he? There are no charges. There are no consequences. But Shontarius is a unique name. So just file that away, because we may find Shontarius in the news again sometime soon. Who knows? Randolph, you're on the Michael Berry Show. Go ahead, sir.
Hello, Michael. I just wanted to kind of echo your sentiments towards Katz's Coffee. Really great product. Restaurants should have it. And a really fine gentleman. He and I kind of know each other through the livestock show. And even when I mispronounced his name in front of a couple of thousand people, he never said a word. He just later very politely and privately informed me that it was Avi, not Abby. So I appreciate that. So, but a great guy, really great guy.
And you know what I love? Coffee. Thank you, Randolph. What I love about Avi Katz is what I love about David Malsby, the executive director of Camp Hope, and what I love about Peter Holt at Lupe Tortilla and Russell Ibarra at Gringo's and Eddie Martini at iHeart. I love people who are passionate about what they do. People who, it's not just a 9-to-5 for them. It is not just a do the minimum. You hear it said, and it's true. If you want to get something done, give it to a busy person. You give it to a person that's not busy, they will procrastinate, make excuses, give you reasons why it hasn't been done, tell you that they're going to do it, they didn't do it. They'll write you a one-hour email on how they don't have time to get done what would have taken 2 minutes to accomplish. You give it to a busy person. You give it to a person that finds joy in what they do. And, you know, I have found that people who are the best at what they do, while they might earn a good living, money is never the driving force. The driving force is they're like a country preacher. They enjoy helping people, interacting with people. That's where they find their inner happiness.
The Michael Berry Show.
Simple man.
People say I'm no good, crazy as a lamb. So I get up in the morning, I get down in the afternoon. Yeah, kind of like an old blue tick hound, just lay around in the shade. I ain't got no money, but I dang sure got it made. Cause I ain't asking nobody for nothing. I can't get it on my own. If you don't like the way I'm living, just leave this long hair country boy alone.
That is the great Charlie Daniels. That is part of the duet collection that was released after his death last year. That is him and Brooks and Dunn. Pop that back up.
He wants me to send a donation because he's worried about my soul. Man said Jesus walked on the water, and I know that it's true. Sometimes I think that preacher man would like to do a little walking too. Cause I ain't asking nobody for nothing if I can't get it on my own. If you don't like the way I'm living, you just leave this long-haired country boy alone.
Imagine if there was a 99.7% chance you wouldn't get cancer, but you were forced to go on chemotherapy to protect others. That was posted by a woman named Rachel, or Jordan Rachel, this morning. But I thought, wow, that's pretty good stuff right there. Now they are San Francisco is now investing $300,000 on designer trash cans as their homeless crisis worsens. RedState.com reports, not surprisingly, homelessness and crime are up big time in Democrat-run cities across the country, including San Francisco, where criminals have been caught on video brazenly stealing from drugstores in the middle of the day in plain view of other customers and even security guards in some instances. In some cases, violent crimes that were reported to police were found to have been committed by a homeless person. It's gotten so bad in the city that a recent poll showed close to 40% of San Franciscans were making plans to relocate in the near future out of frustration. With all that in mind, you'd think the city would make good use of its resources by coming up with creative ways to combat the two issues that have become the most concerning to its residents. Unfortunately, you'd be wrong. According to the San Francisco Chronicle, the city is prepared to blow $300,000 on fancy prototype trash cans, up to $20,000 each for 15 of them, because people weren't crazy about the existing green trash cans. San Francisco has long wanted to replace its universally loathed green trash receptacles seen on sidewalks all over the city. On Wednesday, a supervisors committee learned new prototypes will cost between $12,000 and $20,000 each. Supervisor Matt Haney said $20,000 a can is ridiculous. Despite the high price tag, he agreed Wednesday, along with other committee members, to advance a proposal to design 15 trash can prototypes for a pilot program to the full board for a vote next Tuesday. Haney said he reluctantly agreed because he didn't want to further delay replacing old trash cans since the Department of Public Works worked for 3 years on a new prototype. The city will pay for the prototypes out of budget funds placed on reserve, but any new mass-produced cans would be paid for by trash rates. The cans are designed to encourage recycling, prevent people from digging through them and leaving their messes on the sidewalk, and they include sensors that supposedly alert the city when they're close to getting full, according to other local reports. Isn't that special? You see, what's happening is people put their food waste in the trash can, and then the homeless folks go get it out, eat what they want, and throw the rest on the ground. Several years ago, I don't know how many years it's been, 6, 7, 8 years ago, I think it was 14. I took a group to Memphis, St. Jude. We raised a bunch of money for St. Jude, $150,000. I don't know, a bunch of money. And we flew a private jet out there, and we went to a concert, and a bunch of amazing things happened. But that trip's still a blur and an unpleasant memory because Scott James died while we were there. The following year, I decided we'd do a trip again. And it was, I think, $15,000 for a couple, $20,000, I can't remember. But we raised almost $200,000. We went to Portland, and we went to a grow farm. So we got to see marijuana from the grow farm all the way to the retail shop and every step in between. Now, that doesn't seem like a big deal today, but at the time, that was really a big deal. Nobody had ever seen that. when we were there, one of the days I planned, I took our group, there were 20, 25 of us, I took the group to a food truck park that Portland is famous for. The homeless people in this park were so out of control that they were taking food out of the trash bins and they were flinging it at each other. And our folks were having to play Frogger. You know, it was like some sort of what's that network for kids where they do the sliming? There was food being, Nickelodeon. There was food being flung everywhere. Nobody stopped them. The cops didn't do anything. These people had run amok. And I said, that's the last time I'll bring a group to Portland, Oregon, an otherwise great city that has gone to hell. And by the way, go drive the Pierce Elevated. Go drive right next to the Pierce Elevated and look under that overpass right there. That has become an entire homeless city. That is Bill White, Anise Porker, Sylvester Turner. That is what we have been left with. That is the Democrat dream. Democrats run every major city, and look what it looks like. And it's only getting worse. By the way, I have been pondering COVID shut this down, RCC being closed. I may put together a trip first week of December or second week in January to go see the World War II Museum. It'll be for couples. I'll let you know as that develops.
This is the Michael Berry Show.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
Just love the Alan Toussaint tradition of telling stories in the middle of your song. Robert Earl Keane and his live albums was the Live Dinner number 5. Those of you who know will know. Charlie Robinson talking about driving up and down Bend. Oh, love it.
This piece is about growing up, being born in New Orleans, and taking rides out in the country on some weekends with my father. He'd pack us up in the car and take us for a ride out to visit the old folk in the country who never would come to the city. They wanted nothing to do with the city except us, so we came to them. My father thought we had to go to know where we came from, to know where we were gone. We didn't care about his philosophy, but we loved the ride. But we'd take that ride. And as we'd ride out of town, the further we get out of town, the further and further the houses were apart. After a while, they were very far apart. I mean, a long distance, like a shotgun apart, you know? Maybe that was the point, you know? They were all the same color, those old houses in the country. They were all gray. And they had this old, same old gray boards. In fact, all these houses, I think, they were never new. They were built old. And they all had this long porch all the way across the front. A little short porch, 2 steps, and you're on the porch. And we just loved it, though. And on the ride out there, we'd see things we didn't see. in the city. We'd see cows moving about, horses, pigs, chickens strutting around with all their parts intact, you know. Not a bucket of wings or nothing like that, you know. And we'd pull up in front of Acreage out there, and they'd be waiting for us on the porch, and they'd talk that real funny talk out there. They'd talk that Creole talk. Some of them spoke no English at all. They just talked that Creole. And them who spoke the English, sometimes they had such an accent you didn't know what they were talking about. You just had to look at the eyebrows. If it went up, they were angry. But we loved it. And they'd be waiting on the porch. Angie Lee, they had them funny names. Angie Lee, Tanana, Uncle Edwa, Uncle Mui. And we'd jump out and run and have a wonderful time. And we'd see wells with water in it and outhouses. I know no New Yorker don't know what an outhouse is. I know you don't. But we loved it out there. My brother Vincent, my sister Joyce, my mother Naomi Neville, and my father Clarence, and we'd be out there. And in the evening, in the country, after everyone had eaten, we'd all gather on that front porch, that little short porch. And this was before Children Owned the World. We sat at the lowest level down there. And Angenie and Cousin Nenny sitting in the swing over swinging, and Uncle Moe and Uncle Edwa over there lighting up, legally lighting up, you know. Cigars and pipes and stuff like that. And they'd be talking as I'd hear these old folk talking. It was wonderful because I knew that everything that was important in the whole world was on this porch. I felt warm and safe and very much loved. And everything was peaceful and nice. And I knew that there was someone on this porch who could do something about anything in my life that I needed to know I needed. And as we'd sit out there, it began to get dark. And as the daylight would give on to the night, there was no electricity out there, no running water, no gasoline. So without electricity, quiet was very, very quiet. And we loved it. And as I would look up into the trees, by there being no electricity, there were no street lights, so the moonlight would really show off. And I'd look through the trees, and those leaves that were facing the moonlight would have little silver lights on them. And as the wind would blow through that, those little lights would twinkle on and off. It was absolutely beautiful. I was in the right place. And every now and then, a big gust of wind would come up, and those lights would really carry on. And everyone was just
Alan Toussaint, you know the song from just for us. Glenn Campbell, Southern Nights, but it was written by Alan Toussaint. He's talking about those nights that led him to that song. Southern Nights. Have you ever felt a southern night? Free as a breeze, not to mention the trees, whistling tunes that you know and love so. Southern nights, just as good, even when you close your eyes. I apologize to anyone who can truly say that he has found a better way. Southern skies, have you ever noticed southern skies? Its precious beauty lies just beyond the eye. It goes running through your soul like the stories told of old. Old man, he and his dog that walked the old land, every flower touched his cold hand as he slowly walked by. Weeping willows would cry for joy. Feel so good, it's frightening. Wish I could stop this world from fighting. Mysteries like this and many others in the trees blow in the night in the southern skies. That's storytelling right there.